I don't know if anybody's familiar with a company called Cerence, but they're doing something called, they're trying to package RSS as clips, Clipfolio. Anybody? I actually saw a site that I used to subscribe to an RSS feed.
I saw that, the photo site, yeah.
And now they've got a clip instead of an RSS feed, and it's just a company that's trying to, I guess, commercialize both a client and feeds, so... I don't know if anybody...
I did see that, yeah. Hey, Jenny.
I've been thinking a lot about the dedicated reader part with pre-selected feeds because, you know, obviously I have a bias here, but I don't see why you need an economic model to build aggregators. And as an information service, I can see very clearly centering them back in a library. And if you're at a university... That library, your library, whether it's the philosophy department, the math department, whatever, could have pre-subscribed feeds, and they're providing that service to you, and you can add to it. If you're at the public library, they can provide you the local media feeds, and you can add to it. It's information, and that's centered at the library. You're part of a library community. And I could see where you don't have to have an economic model for that. You know, I could take a fraction of what a company would need and build the half dozen top wishes that we all have for an aggregator, distribute it to every library, and the library would teach the people how to use it. It would be too simple to use in my dreams, but we teach internet classes. Let's teach aggregators. Let's teach people information. That's what we do. So that's my dream.
I'm just curious if anyone's looked into the issue of RSS breaking down when the masses start using it. Is there enough bandwidth out there, you know, when everybody starts... all these requests every hour to go through all these sources, does it still work?
Yeah, well, so we thought that we were approaching meltdown about a year and a half ago because what happened was everybody was hitting everybody else's site once an hour and pulling the whole feed down. And then I think it was Simon Fell sort of pointed out that there is this mechanism that allows you to detect change and not fetch it's a general web mechanism. It allows you to detect change, and if there hasn't been any change, then you only fetch a really small amount of data instead of the whole feed again. So now all the aggregators essentially support that, and it is a stopgap solution, which is working pretty well for now.
But even with that, when you today,
yeah.
Does this work for free?
No, it doesn't. So it's not a distributed systems solution, and you know there's lots of great research and thinking in the distributed systems area, and there is in fact. You know, in the same way that you have Akamai, which is pushing content to the edge and caching and decentralizing access, right? I mean, this absolutely can and will occur in the RSS network, too, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you know, subscriptions want to sort of, you know, move upstream, you know, close to the source, right, and be combined and not redundantly fetched where they don't need to be. You know, but I think that's... You know, personally, I think that's part of the general progress of internet architecture, not something specific to this.
We built a system about 2 years ago called Newswire, newswire.cs.cnl, the view if you look at specifics for it, that does collaborative content delivery. Basically, it takes your RSS feed in at some point, or you become a publisher, put it into the system, and in the same way that you know all the other peer-to-peer systems works, this delivers basically your RSS changes to your desktop, and we all share a bit of bandwidth to establish this, to make sure that this arrives at these various places. And advantages of that is that it's a survivable infrastructure. You know, parts can break down, half the internet can break down, and this system will continue to deliver news, urgent news, to your desktop.
Yeah.
And so, yes, there is lots of research going on into that direction, and I think once the problems become more urgent, these other solutions will be incorporated into the infrastructure that we have.
Yeah.
And I think it's also an issue for the underlying architectures, the tools that are out there, the bot software. You know, if you're not putting out a last modified or the different headers to specify to the aggregators that you know they shouldn't poll or that something hasn't changed, then I mean, essentially the infrastructure is broken in that way. If you're not caching feeds. Maybe that you don't update every so often, you know, your infrastructure is going to break down because you need that, I guess, that trust at every level to or the information at every level to, you know, specify this stuff has changed, this stuff hasn't changed.
But what are you seeing out there? I mean, what I see out there is most everybody's playing by the rules now, and it just, you know, it's went from being a pretty imminent problem to something that we've successfully postponed probably for a couple of years until some of these other strategies get kicked in. I'm less concerned about the bandwidth and the throughput, and I'm a lot more concerned about the processing and the local intelligence, you know, and you know, all these issues.
And so one fundamental distributed systems thing to realize here is that there's this RSS basically represents state. It's not messaging. Now you go there, you fetch state. That's what you do when you go to your refrigerator. You ask it what its current state or what the history of its state is. And the way that we're using it by polling is it's trying to build a sort of a messaging infrastructure that in asynchronous where stuff either gets pushed or... And so these are very different concepts. You want to be notified. Notifying is getting a message. Mm-hmm. While, you know, what we do is really look at state and go back to state and retrieve current state, which is a very different concept.
Right.
So it's on education tree.
There's also a to me interesting phenomenon, which is again because RSS kind of came out of this news realm. You know, it has tended to focus on a style of communication and a style of publishing, which people think of as news, right? So it didn't happen today. It didn't happen. It's not interesting, right? You know, so the notion of recovery of history. Of past events, I think is you know, we sort of fall off the continental shelf, right? It's like it's in my local cache, and I have access to it now, and it's current. Or I can probably find it on Google if I need it, right? You know, and I mean, we have again got all of this local storage and local processing power that could be spending some of its time, I think, you know, building richer views of the places that we've been, the things that we've read, the trails that we've taken. You know, I mean, that I think to me is that'd probably be my number one feature, right? You know, because I have more local storage and more local processing than I am making use of, and when I fall off the continental shelf and I go to Google, I waste time, right? You know, I waste time reconstructing contexts which once existed because I created those contexts by executing a series of actions.
Do you want to keep searching? Do you want to keep old RSS feeds? What do you want?
I want to keep, I mean, I have room actually for probably most of the data that I consume because it is just text, right? It's just links and text. So I have actually got a lot of space, but more I want to be able to resurrect contexts, right? So, you know, I was in an environment where, you know, the web browser was in a state where I had, you know, visited this site, and this site, you know, these were the things that were sort of, you know, top of the queue, right? And I want to get back to that context. And that context recovery is a very difficult chore, right? And I don't think this requires a lot of AI. I just think this requires, you know, it's kind of like a fancy undo sort of mechanism, you know, with a lot of depth to it and a lot of, you know, a lot of flexibility.
But you also have to have a way of finding it because, you know, you're not going to, after you've, you know, been doing this for a month or a year, you're not going to be able to remember exactly.
Right. Well, I mean, search will get me in the neighborhood, right? Search gets me in the neighborhood, but it doesn't reconstruct the context for me, and that I would really enjoy.
Quick question for me: the browser cannot write to the local file system. Hasn't this been the real barrier?
It's a barrier. Yeah.
I think it's the big one. That's why so much is on the server today. Second reason on the server: you have it from wherever you are. It's in your local machine, and you go to work, you get it if it's on the server. So server side seems preferable. But I understand wasting a 2 gigahertz.
No, I mean, you know, this is not with regard to where the context is stored. It's with regard to, is the context stored?
Excellent.
Right, and right now it isn't.
Okay.
The concept of the computer being aware of what you're doing and giving you clues to, if you want to go back and look and try to find more information on that context of what you were doing it, is more pervasive than, you know, it goes outside of the whole weblogging world. There have been projects, you know, where... Like, I've worked myself on, you know, working within the desktop metaphor and having a computer keep track of exactly what you're doing and being able to, you know, break that down and say, well, you happen to be working this application, looking at these sites or whatever. And it does that mostly through, you know, string extraction and, you know, just regexing it against, you know, different patterns.
Right.
And that's very limited. a lot of the better work has been done in the, you know, like with the HUDs, people who are, you know, working on pervasive computing, like at MIT. I believe there was like something called the Athena Project, where they had a user interface where instead of a windowed interface, it would work with an orthogonal data store, which basically comprised the entirety of everything that's on your computer.
You may be thinking about David Gelernter's, it's been under various names, right? But that's sort of that idea that, you know, your life is this stream, right? And you're basically, you know.
That's a presentation mechanism rather than. It's not a storage mechanism, it's a presentation mechanism.
Yeah.
Right now, I've gone to having three windows open at all times: Outlook, IE, and now Administrator. And back to the sort of where you started this off, processing of information. I want to convert all subscriptions that I have on email to my Administrator. But I'm in this sort of nebulous world right now where I still get some stuff via email and some stuff in RSS in my reader. But there's no easy mechanism for me to go over to like a fully opt-in world, I guess I could. I'm wondering if there's anything out there that would facilitate me in this transition.
Sure. I mean, that's one of those low-hanging fruit. There's a couple of there's services out there that will go in both directions, right? There are services that you can start an email thread, which automatically becomes an RSS subscription that people can pull, or vice versa, right? This is a pretty simple sort of a filtering and transforming thing. Although, you know, come to think of it, I don't think any of them have really caught on in a big way. So that's right. I mean, is anyone using something like that on a regular basis now? Like, I'm taking this email newsletter, and they don't offer an RSS feed, so just route it, you know, through something so that I can take it as RSS.
Yahoo Groups does it, don't they? I think
Yahoo Groups is now RSSable.
Oh, they are. Yeah.
There's a service in India out of Blogstream that does exactly what you're saying.
Right.
They take the email,
okay. So if I'm taking a CNET.com newsletter and I'm just tired of the email, I can send it through this service and get it as a feed.
Yep.
Which means.
But I want to be intelligent enough.
Mail bucket that just came out to convert your email to RSS.
Right. And it immediately.
Are you talking about technology?
That's the other direction.
It needs to be an intelligent system that I don't necessarily need to act upon each of these emails. So like anything that's sort of published, it's not a personal. Email, but this is like my push content that I'm receiving, that it's making that conversion.
Right. If you do that, you could also be spam. That's the problem. Exactly the same thing.
Right. Right. Because you have to give it an address. Right. I mean, you go to CNET.com, you sign up as some identity to receive this message.
Right.
So how do you now attach that identity? Well, what you do, I guess, is you establish an alternate identity. Right. You give that only to this.
But it's an opt-in conversion on everything.
Yeah. But actually, I think there's some mileage there. Come to think of it.
So if you did that to everything that you had given permission to, so that you were getting all your permission-based email coming through your RSS feed, and all you had left was your whitelist correspondence, at that point, would you be able to run a perfect scan filter?
Well, I wouldn't be able to because I.
Well, you and I have the same problem, which we have all these people who've never heard from before.
Exactly.
Sending this email.
Exactly. Same. Right. So, it's almost 12:30. Anybody have burning thoughts that didn't get expressed?
I have actually one more question. Is there a need for more metadata?
Always.
In the feed.
Always.
And how are we going to do it in there? How are we going to do it?
And mom and apple pie, too.
Yeah.
Metadata, mom and apple pie. Thanks. Where we're going to get it, I don't know. But
okay, let's get some pie.
Screen up. Plug you into the VGA. Do you know how to make your
okay.
function.
All right, so I'll aim this a little bit over here so you can be on that side.
You got a puppet that might
hurt your eyes.
It's just
good afternoon. My name is Harold Gilchrist, and I have a web blog called Audio Blogging, Mobile Blogging News. And my labor of love has been covering audio blogging for about the last year, trying to follow the trends of what's happening with audio blogging. And I'm going to quickly put a slide up here. The goal I see of audio blogging is to create a simple or to use simple audio production tools to easily publish audio to the web. I mean, it's that simple. One time I made a statement on a web blog. I said, because everybody was arguing back and forth, like, you know, what exactly audio blogging was. And I said, if you put an audio file in a post, it's an audio blog. Now, exactly what audio blogging is, we're still trying to figure that out. And as everything is evolving, I would hate to really put a definition on exactly what it is. So what I did was I put a timeline up of different events that I've witnessed and went back on the internet. And so you can see there was a period back in August of 2001, lasted for about a year, called the Hello World phase. And that's basically when people, you know, they were using homebrew systems, they were putting audio files on their web blogs, and just kind of talking back and forth and seeing how, you know, how the experiment was working out. Something happened in August of 2002. All of a sudden, one day, it was like everybody got turned on. I mean, everybody was trying it. So that's where I consider the mainstream bloggers, they start noticing audio blogging. A lot of that had to do with Adam Curry. I think he discovered it, and he has a lot of readers to his weblog, and that really helped audio blogging get noticed. And then in early 2003, a gentleman named Noah Glass out of California, he introduced a product called Oddblog, and that's a phone-based audio blogging tool for bloggers. It makes the entry level into audio blogging very simple. We no longer had to use homebrew systems. It was now just a matter of picking up your cell phone, dialing in a number, listening to a prompt, just like you do your voicemail. And it was very simple to get that audio file, create that audio file. And then this year, just a few months ago, Bob Doyle, who's manning the camera back there, him and Christopher Leiden, they built a portable studio to do... I should have added it to that, blogradio.org. What I call what they were doing was blog radio. Now they even have a domain that covers it. So that's on the technology side. If we look at the content side, now I started doing audio blogging back in the beginning of 2002, right around January. If you go back to the history of web blogging, radio made its entry onto the market early 2002, I believe it was in January. My first email to Dave Weiner was, how do I put audio up on your server? I have gotten a present from my wife, little Olympus recorder that created WAV files and didn't have a web blog, a real easy way to get the audio files up. And as soon as I got radio, I was like, you know, how do I put these files up on the web? And I was doing it since January 2002. But then when I started looking around and, you know, looking in Google and looking up audio blogging, there was a gentleman named Jish who, I'll just click this. Bob, is there any way we can mic that in?
You can send it to the web by putting your mic down near it. Just take, unclip it and put it down there. But not, they can't hear it in the room any better.
Okay.
Should have brought you some speakers.
But wasn't there an amplifier also before?
No.
Okay. Sorry about that. Let me see if there's an
amplifier. I'm hearing it pretty well.
Okay. Wonder if I can get creative.
If you're watching this on the web, you'd hear it better.
Okay. There's no PA in here at all, right? Let me see if this one comes up any louder, and I'll try cranking it up. So here's another one. This is Adam Curry. This is the one of the posts that he created.
Man, the internet sometimes is a wacky place. The strangest ideas catch fire and just spread fast. Audio blogging appears to be one of those, and I'm getting lots of flow and linkage and excellent feedback, both in comments as well as privately through email. It's just something about being able to read along with an author that makes it somehow quite appealing. And my goal in this experiment is to stimulate developers. I gotta deliver content on a regular basis that can actually be used royalty free, and yet not be a total waste of ad, which of course
can you hear that?
I was just reading the change notes on RSS 0.94, which now includes element name distribution over Nutella possible. Now, this could be used for audio files. Otherwise, I foresee lots of bandwidth and storage problems for those inclined to crack the mic from time to time. Perhaps this can even be integrated somehow with PeterCast, which streams audio over Nutella networks. The next steps are beginning to dawn. Video. I'll tell you, I'm almost ready to start my visual weblog.
And that's a good point. When you start doing audio, it's really putting multimedia files up. I mean, a lot of the infrastructure that we can create is not going to be much different than the video. And so that was back in August of 2002. Now, this one here got a lot of play on the different web radio shows. This guy kind of he hit a chord. And the final one is something that Bob... Okay, so you get the idea. So again, I mean, I go back to 2001, just starts out. Homebrew, pretty much. Adam Curry, homebrewed. Brian Allison, homebrewed. And then now Christopher Leiden. Hello, Christopher. Nice to meet you. And then Chris is actually using radio. Am I correct?
Yeah.
To publish your audio blog,
Manila,
right?
Manila, actually.
Manila, okay. Okay, so we go on to the next slide. Here's a statement that Mitch Ratcliffe made in the beginning. Something was happening. When people first started doing audio blogging, for some natural reason, they started just basically speaking back their words. They would put a text blog up, and they would actually read it like a script. And we knew it was more than that, but in the beginning, it was just, you know, very easy just to feel comfortable with the text-based posts that they were creating and just kind of just reading them back. And I talked to Noah Glass, and there's a couple people that you might want to check out. There's this guy, Chris Coppola. He calls himself the Unknown Coppola. And this is what he's doing with audio blog. And what he is he's a small film producer, and he puts some audio blogs up as he travels around. You hear this? Which item?
This is Christopher Goldblatt calling in. It's Saturday night. I'm still in Toronto. I'm actually, I had a little bit of a setback because the bar and club that we're going to have the after party after my screening just told us that they won't serve alcohol. And, you know, for me, you know, the experience of seeing a film and celebrating is equally as important as the film. That's what attracts me to it, is that so many people have to get together, and I like to observe how people react, and good or bad, and sometimes
So basically, he just talks to his audience. You know, he's creating these small films. If you go to his website, he dreams of having these small theaters in every town where he's kind of, you know, where the theater is playing these low-budget movies, and he's a producer doing that. Now, this one here is interesting. This is guy Chuck Palahniuk, I guess. And he's a book author, and what he does, he's on a book tour. So he goes to Pittsburgh, I believe, and then something happens with a security at the college. And the next day, he puts this up.
Hey, this is Chuck. September 16th, and I am in Pittsburgh, and it was a terrific event. Two more people have blacked out, so we're now...
I have no idea what that means. Two more people have blacked out.
...the U.S. tour. Boy, I apologize for how this evening went. The event itself was terrific, but the bookstore had arranged for a bunch of rent-a-cops threw us out at 10:30. So
these are people that are using their audio blocks to talk to the people that are either buying their movies and or buying their books. Okay. And like I said earlier, there's as far as the tools that are out there to audio blog, there's these phone to weblog tools. If you go over to iBlog or VoiceMonkey, VoiceMonkey doesn't really have that much popularity out there. VoiceMonkey does sort of the same thing that iBlog does. They give you a phone number, you dial the phone number, creates an audio file, and it's emailed to you. And what happens is you just take the audio link that the email gives you and you put it into your post. The file is stored on their system. So it makes it easier. That's one of the problems you have once you start audio blogging. It's like, how do I get my audio file onto the web? They're doing that for you, and they're also, you know, becoming your microphone by using a plain old phone set to do it. So if you look on the web, and if you just even search on iBlog, you'll see a lot of people out there trying it. They give you the first post for free, and then I think there's a limit on the post to be in 4 minutes, and you get like 12 posts for maybe $4.99 a month, and VoiceMonkey's pretty competitive with that. And then we have our homebrew systems. Okay, all right, something I want to talk about. Okay, so basically what you see with the iBlog and the VoiceMonkeys is that we're tying our audio files into our posts, which makes a lot of sense. Now, I'm doing something a little bit different with my homebrew system, and I'm going to show you how I use it. I can use my desktop audio recorder, okay, and are we all comfortable with what that is, or... Basically, in Windows, you get a audio recorder. You can use your mic input to take the audio in. I prefer to use. I bought something from Sound Blaster. It actually comes with this, and for about $60, you can buy this from Sound Blaster. It'll give you an MP3 recorder, and you can record your own audio onto your computer. And so the system I'm putting together allows you to take those files and send them up to the server. I also have I'm working on a record audio in my browser. One of the things, the reason why I believe audio blogging is lagging behind text browsing, is that HTML delivers to you something called a text box in HTML. So that comes with HTML. Now, the problem with audio, we don't have an audio box inside HTML. So one of the reasons I think that, multimedia is not easy for the average person like me to produce is because, you know, HTML didn't deliver that simplicity. And the people that are producing these other systems that are out there are more looking for the higher end producers of content. So we got to get around that. So there's a thing called the Freedom Java Applet, and I tied that Freedom Recorder into my Homebrew system. It allows me to put a title on each entry. And what I do is, let me bring it up. It's easier if I show you. So okay, so this is my site. Okay, now on the left-hand side, where people put their blog rolls, I created an independent channel, audio channel, right over here. I keep scrolling down my page. This to me is my micro audio blog, okay? Now, when I create an entry, it automatically puts the last entry here. If I think the entry is important enough, what I do is I take this out, this link here, and I paste it into my text box. But this is basically constantly running, and it's independent on what's happening inside my weblog. Now, one thing I found was when I put audio in my weblog, I don't produce a lot of audio, but I do produce a lot of posts, text posts. It wasn't very long before my audio posts scrolled off my screen. So what I wanted to do is, I want to keep my audio up on the top of my screen, so I want to keep an independent audio log running all the time. And then when I feel that it should be something that should be also, you know, included, I bring it over here. Other thing you notice also, I have an XML RSS feed that includes enclosures. So if you subscribe to this XML feed, you're going to get a pure audio enclosure feed, which is independent than the feed that's coming from this part of my weblog. Yes.
Explain a little bit how you can get audio in RSS. I mean, when I look at an RSS feed,
okay.
I see a bunch of text.
Okay, it's just a link. It's okay. That's all it is. So it's sort of like attaching. It's even not quite like attaching a file to your email. But it's
so if I see a link that has .wav.
It's inside the. No, let me bring it up and show you.
Oh, thanks.
I can show it to you. That's great. That's a great question. So if I bring up this link here, okay, you'll see here, okay, this is my title, right? The description, okay? In this case, I'm using the title for the description at the same time. But here's the enclosure. The enclosure is just a pointer to where the file lives on the web, okay? The length of it. And what type of file? You're not getting the file. I'm just giving you a link.
Sorry, I didn't.
Okay, so that's the way it works. So basically, and the rule I'm using with this particular XML file is that I'm cutting it off at the 20, and then basically it's the next one in kind of goes on top, and the one on the bottom falls off. So going back to this, again, I'm treating the left-hand side of my web page as an independent audio log, and the XML will follow that. So now what I said to you before was, what I'm trying to do is basically audio on the fly. Yesterday when I created all these links right here, I was basically, I had my recorder in the browser opened up, I had this going, okay, so we can get, eventually, we're going to be able to get this to work so anybody can produce audio off of their computer. Because they won't have to go hunting in Windows for a recorder. This is an applet. You can pull this applet down. What this applet does, it creates Org Vorbis format audio. When I send this audio to my server, I convert it to MP3 and also WAV on the fly. So when I'm serving my files, I'm giving the viewer three different choices depending on how they want to listen to it. So in this case here, if I wanted to create audio, does anyone want to be a volunteer?
Yeah.
Bill, can you do it?
Bill.
All right, it's going to be real quick. So what I do here is I just, okay, what's your name?
Bill.
Okay, so I hit the record button. Again, this is in a browser. Okay, all right, so Bill, Chris, what question would you want to ask him, Bill?
Why radio? Why sound? Why sound? I think the immediacy, the emotion, what, only 7% of communication is verbal? How much of that can we communicate on the web using audio blogs?
Okay. So then what I do is I hit stop, and I hit send. Okay. Now, that information right now is going to my server in the basement of my house.
Essentially, it's a file upload.
What's that? It's doing a basically a file upload and sending the metadata along with it. So what I'm going to do at the same time is I'm going to bring up a separate. Okay. Did you notice on the left there?
Amazing.
Okay.
Great work.
There's a real test. Now let's see the real test now. I didn't check any of my audio levels. Let's see if that works. So let me show you something else. There's a more right there. You see that more? Now, I'm not a great HTML designer, but you see here I got MP3, org board bits, and I have WAV. All three are available now too. And I can also do 3GPP. So if we do 3GPP, now we're available to the people that have the mobile telephones. So it's the format of the audio, not so much anything more than that. Okay? What's that?
MP3 goes straight to the iPod. And icons. Yes.
You're right.
For Christopher's sake. Right. Yeah.
MP3
goes
straight to the iPod.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Thank you, Bill. Bill did a great job.
Yeah.
Okay, so. Okay, here's the MP3 coming from my house.
I could have brought
myself, Bill.
Okay, so that's the way it works. So you can see this being used for a comment system eventually for doing audio blogging. Again, remember, I'm doing it inside of a browser, so that's the next piece I think we got to get going. And like I said, my philosophy on how I'm doing the audio blog is a little bit different also. I don't want this, I put up six posts, and this thing is sitting down here. I want to keep it up on the screen.
Capture system is doing that triple encoding simultaneously?
What happens, the file goes up to my server, and I use encoders on the back end to do it. It's real fast also.
I see. So there's a little bit of latency, perhaps, if you're...
There is. Okay. But if I were to click any of those right now, it would, they're there.
Yeah.
That's my smoking of photos. There is a lag in the equipment to pick this up. It's a similar model. Right. That way makes sense.
Could the sound clip that I recorded just as easily have come from a cell phone from a remote location in some of these phone to web blog apps you talked about earlier?
I'm actually developing something called the audio blogging gateway, which separates the actual sending of the audio file and the presentation layer. So yes, you're right. I mean, it would be very easy to hook in a phone to web blog. Also, I have another interface I used yesterday also, which tangles me up also, is where I use a regular audio recorder off my computer, save the file, and then send the file up to my server. I even myself find that complicated. I mean, especially if I'm trying to do it live. What I was trying to do yesterday, I mean, 4 minutes wound up being a very good time to try to record a little segment. What worked perfectly was there was questions being asked by the moderator, and then there was a response. And what I was doing, I was recording the question and the response, and then putting a title in, getting the names off my sheet, and then stopping at about 4 minutes and setting it up my web blog. Now, there was people on the other end that were pulling those files down. Now, yes, people were listening to the live broadcast, but what happened if you weren't home? And it was news, right? It was news that was happening right away. I don't know if I want to wait till somebody takes that long file and cuts it up into little pieces. You know, the clips worked out real well, so that's kind of a way to do, I mean, live audio blogging, you know, from a conference. We talked about these, so Oblog is your choice if you want to try doing some audio blogging. VoiceMonkey, and actually people at VoiceMonkey don't just do phone to web blogging. They're just following that trend right now. They'll host any kind of audio. They even gave me the invitation if I wanted to host my audio files at BloggerCon. So if you have some idea that you want to do with audio, audio blogging or audio in general, they might be the people to talk to. Phone Blogger, if you have your own server and you want to do some kind of voice XML and you want to do some experimentation, they have some scripts. I think they're Python scripts that you could use their software. It's open source to try that. So if that's a little bit more risky, you know, you want to know a little bit about setting servers up. So I just threw it out there. And AOL keeps threatening us about, audio blogging. So I haven't seen it yet. They've been talking about it, and that's soon to come.
What do you mean they're actually threatening?
Well, I'm saying they've been talking about it, but I haven't seen it.
They previewed the new web blogging tools. They said they were going to have.
Oh, you did? And is the audio blogging there?
No. They're saying it out loud.
Right. It's in their marketing right now, kind of as a, and we will have this.
Right. Because it's a big deal that you can IM into your blog there.
Okay.
For them, this is an extension.
And enclosure. So earlier I showed you the RSS feed, and you're hearing more and more about people talking about enclosures right now. And I think as we start moving audio blogging forward, enclosure will become really, really important. Now, I think we need to call it something else, but I think that's too techy of a word. So right away, somebody creates a product and they call it enclosure extractor. I mean, so, and that to me is, and I'll show you a little bit about that, and I'm going to demonstrate how you use that. So, okay, so there's a gentleman up in Canada, his name is Richard. I've been emailing with him lately. I had some problems. I used something called Dynamic DNS. Basically, I have a server in my basement, and I run it off the cable network. I'm able to get people to serve off my cable modem. And I go to port 90, which is a little techy talk, but basically I need to use a service called Dynamic DNS to be able to give it a name. Like the name of the server is www.ablogs.com, and it does a redirect for me. Now, he had some problems redirecting, and he fixed it this week. But let me show you how this basically works. What you do is you point it to an enclosure. So the enclosure I showed you earlier, that's the where it lives, okay? That's the one I opened up before when I showed you. Okay, what you do is you hit this little globe there. Don't fail me, okay? It actually went out and read the RSS file, and what it's doing, it doesn't trust that little tag I had. It told it how big the MP3 file was, so it's actually getting information from my server and coming up with the size itself. It's not pulling the file down. It's reading it a different way. So it would have happened much faster if they would have just took my tag. And what I heard from his experience is that he's found that people aren't really supporting that tag, and the numbers are all over the place. So he's actually asking the server for the file size information, which is going to be more accurate. So as you can see, it's building this list. And once I get this list, we just have three more to go. Actually, Chris, your feed, like that, because you're not doing the redirects like I'm doing. So it's a little harder for him to do that.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you look over here, these are all the different files I created yesterday on my feed with the titles. So let's say we want to. Okay, I'm just going to pick one of them. You just mark the ones you want. Okay? And then you hit this little. And it goes out and gets your files. And then what it does, it moves the files down into a folder on your computer. And basically, you just double-click the to file any pledge. So he also has a delivery system in it where it'll run every hour or every 2 hours. And if you already got the file, it will not bring the same file down again. Okay, that's basically what I wanted to show. Is there any questions about any of this?
Is there some extension into the chat protocol? That's an audio extension into the chat protocol that might be related.
There's the DCC for the IRC chat protocol that lets you send files.
Okay.
Some chat files support that.
My personal feeling would be probably better off to wait for voice over IP and try to interface into that, because
right.
In a sense, that's what you want. You want to have, because I mean, Cisco's announcing now these wireless voice over IP telephone sets.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be the new protocol, you know, and there's going to be some ways to pull audio files down. I think that's where I would like to see it go.
The question I have is, and I came in a little bit late, I apologize. Is this something that you're bringing forward, you're bringing to market?
Today I'm showing the idea. I mean, this is what I'm cooking up in my basement. I think we're all cooking things up in the basement.
Because this has an absolute VOIP opportunity. VOIP sounds way more, we're talking about Cisco and their phone. Those phones from two or three different vendors have been
sure.
out for years. But anyone who has a connection, and provided it's not dial-up, because there's a ton of latency problems back and forth. You don't get the concept of trains going in either direction. You have a lot of start and stop locals. But VOIP, you can trade audio through, you know, if you've got cable or DSL, trading audio back and forth is really not a hassle at all.
Exactly.
And the VOIP is a lousy way of doing it. It's transferring files. If you're actually moving, voice over IP is a real-time protocol. It's for conversations. It's for a phone call. If you just want to move music around, you're much better off just using TCP.
No, V is for voice.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, IP protocol for moving, my God, I sound like a tech and I'm not, but IP protocol for moving data is another issue than VOIP.
Yeah. Well, what you could do is you could set up a call between you and a gateway, like the audio gateway that I'm working on. So you could be talking to the gateway, leaving your message, and then have the gateway do the instructions on where to put the file, just like I'm doing with these other interfaces. So I see voice over IP being the next interface I start looking at with the audio blogging gateway.
Do you have the packets contained so that the choppiness and the jitter is gone?
Over voice over IP?
Yes.
Again, I haven't even attempted yet.
Okay.
But I'm saying that would be the way I would go about it. I would get an API that would allow me to set the streaming up between myself and the voice over IP connection. I would look just like another phone number on the voice over IP
right.
network. And whatever quality that the network would allow me to do is what I would be left with. Yes?
Yes, when I started playing circuit, there's a couple of mouths. One's sort of blurred because it's speaking faster. In this case, as it led the article with talking about 12% faster, where it was used as increasing the information in advertisement. However, very soon, within a few paragraphs, the real value of saving our time, we can and will be using more audio, VOIP or other forms of digitized audio, and even utilizing some of our time, drive time, commute time, whatever. So my question is, do you have any knowledge of some of the newer tools? There's been a couple tools that allow this throttle, both faster, twice as fast, three times as fast for us to go through and understand and only slow down when we need to hear a name like the phone messages machine did up to.
So you're saying something that's actually filtering the voice?
It's actually processing the voice, so you have to have some other cache system.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, so that you are saving time. If you were at home to your message machine, you had 10 messages on it, and you don't want to stand there for 20 minutes.
I gotcha.
You can understand.
I know what you're saying. Yeah, the problem we have right now with audio blogging, and I'm picking on audio blogging because that's where my interest is that we have to interface to other kind of devices that are on the market already, because we don't have enough of a market to really start controlling, you know, what was going on there. So, like, what I do is I put these onto a little Rio, okay, and a little Rio interface is very, very primitive. I mean, basically, you're moving from file to file. So we need a way to kind of shuttle, you know, and then also put the kind of filtering you're saying into it.
Faster and slower. It's not shuttling.
I know you're saying, but I'm saying even the Rios don't have that. I mean, a lot of these devices we have don't even have the basic shuttling.
And I'll tell you, they have had the code for it, but they're waiting for years. Even the big major internet players have had to go over. They do not want to release it until the demand is there. The market really is in terms of being able to hear audio, either for education or for just keeping up with the news.
So the hope is, like I said, once we start getting these tools and, I mean, out there, demand will be there, and I think then you'll start seeing the, you know, either the rolling out what people have or development. Chris, I think you were next.
At the risk of crashing your party, I'd like to make a longish comment and a longish question.
Sure.
Not too long. But the short of it is, I just want to begin with a sort of pre-tech observation and a short story about an advertising genius in New York, still going, I think, Tony Schwartz. He did that famous Lyndon Johnson girl with a daisy petal commercial in 1964. But he did Coca-Cola, he did many, many candidates, enormously interesting character and a writer. But he was a huge believer in sound, and he gave me a kind of definitive respect for audio. He had an ad that he did for a number of candidates. I remember he did it for a guy named Robert Abrams, who was running for Attorney General in New York. And it was basically the face of that clock, the 60 seconds. And it would begin, it would show you, the video would show you the clock. And it said, and the voice would say, would you give me 60 seconds to tell you about Robert Abrams, how he won World War II, smarter than Einstein, who solved the crime problem in New York forever and ever. And all the eye did was watch that second. And at the very end, he would flash a picture of Robert Abrams and his cat, or his wife, or his children. Vote Abrams. Tony's point was, and he was telling me then, I was interviewing him for the New York Times, that the trick in his advertising was to neutralize the eye and come in under the radar through the ear. He said you sell basically through audio, and it's been the short form of my discoveries in media, first in the New York Times, then in public television, and then doing radio, that radio and sound, what Studs Terkel calls vox humana, is the most freighted, emotionally interesting, various, irresistible, not to mention that you can do it in your car or while you're ironing or doing the dishes. It is such a wonderful medium, the human voice. So my interest now is to figure out how we can bring the clarity and the variety of the human voice to the internet, and specifically to the blog conversation, which tends to run toward chaos. It's actually just a screen, and after a while it can seem a very partial slice of a human expression, and sort of all the same, and what's the thread, and my own belief is, and my own hope is, that the human voice in conversation can bring a kind of richness that it doesn't have. So that's the comment. The question is, I'm especially interested in the technology, and I want to admire everything you're doing in your garage and your basement. I'm interested in technology that can give us a first-class sound to begin with, I mean CD quality, and then especially make it interactive. I'm now doing very high, and thanks entirely to Bob Doyle and Skybuilders, who's taught me how to record some of this. We do MP3 files that if the wind is right, I mean, the sound quality is excellent, and they're substantive interviews. But to me, the next riddle is not only how to put them on live broadcast, over-the-air terrestrial broadcast, but even more, to make them interactive on the web. And to make, I mean, I think if we can get it all together, the technology is there to have an interactive, global web conversation about everything, much as we've done on the radio, and we're trying to do in a sort of trial form on my website. But what is the technology, in short, that's going to make this conversation two-way as far as the internet reaches?
Well, I think I hinted a little bit on it before. The problem I see right now, and I've been working, right now is a labor of love. I was doing streaming video back in 93, 94, and I always was amazed when I talked to companies, and I won't mention any names, they were not that interested in my audio. I worked for Belcore, which was the research for the seven operating companies at the time, and when they had conversations with me. They were asking me about big corporations. They weren't asking me about. I thought they were going to level the playing field. All of us were going to have a radio station that we would be able to easily talk on, and they weren't interested in that. They were interested in getting to all the broadcast companies and giving them a new way to be able to broadcast. And when I started doing some streaming video, I did one streaming video in Paris. I did it for WW3. It was a worldwide web conference. Everything was very manual. I mean, Chris, you probably can relate to this. I'm sure a lot of stuff you're doing is also very manual. You got to know how to use FTP. You got to know how to move files. You got to know how to do some HTML. And even when I talk to, even today, the video file serving companies, they still assume that we're all techies. So it goes back to the fundamental problem. The fundamental problem is that HTML was not really, you know, it gave us the ability to put any kind of audio, you know, get the audio up to the server, and we're gonna bring it down. Now, Day One had done a lot of great work in making the web two-way. You know, by using the thing called a text box that comes with HTML, we don't have a text box equivalent to record the audio. So I think the way I'm going is that we got to play with something like applets. You know, get the applet down into the browser, a recorder applet, so the user just goes to the HTML page and the applet comes right into the page. It's plugged in there. They don't have to go looking for a recorder. And it could be an Org Vorbis recorder, it could be an MP3 recorder. That's where I think we got to be. And then when you put up an interview, you know, with anybody from the blogosphere, I can comment right away. You know, that second back, you can give me a link, and I'll go over to the applet, right? And I can talk right into it. So I think that's where we got
to
go.
I'd like to have your comments in effect be part of the feed.
Ask me the question again.
Well, I mean, say I put up an interview with Julie Powell of the Julie Project, and she's talking about cooking and Julia Child's recipes and blah blah blah. And I'd like you to be able to,
I see,
you know, in effect, say no, don't put too much tomato in the sauce or something. Mm-hmm. And in effect, do
you want a link out of the audience?
I think we could do, yeah, exactly what you're saying. If just like I was doing yesterday, the interview was going on live before you guys were done. I had six links up. They were there. I mean, but they were me playing the conference back. But it could have been me with a microphone saying, "Hey, Chris, hold on a second. Let me ask this question." I mean, it only takes 30 seconds. I mean, or a minute to get my question out. It's not going to take that long with broadband today in a home to send that file up to the server, and you get the link like that. So there's going to be a small delay if I send a file. Now we could make it so we're streaming over and then you know, hit the stop button and stop, but I don't think we're going to buy much because you still got to send that much data up. Now when I'm done with the question, click, I got to say stop. So what's different if I'm streaming it or if I send the same file one big chunk up to the server? So I think we got to start out with, I hate to say, small questions, but I'm saying with small comments and then go from there. Yeah. But we got to get a starting point. Now right now it's just pretty much, you know, even when I create audio blogs, I don't have a comment system online, so I'm like talking to the world, and I'm not letting the world talk back to me, and that's what I want to do. I want to have that conversation, and that's a piece I'm hoping I can push next. Yes?
Two quick questions. One, do you think this extends to video? I play blogs or video blogs a lot, and there are new great cheap tools to do that with teleprompters.
I think all this architecture is all right into play with the video blogging.
Right. The next question comes out of that is bandwidth.
I think we have the bandwidth to do audio today, and as soon as we get this all figured out, we can go to video.
I mean the cost of bandwidth. When I put up mine and people come to it, it kills my monthly server allotment in no time flat.
Right.
There's been a lot. Dave's talked a lot about.
Yeah,
about
I know you
say, as a solution.
Well, think about what I'm doing. I mean, and I'm not probably going to be as famous as other people in this audience as far as getting hit with the audio, but I have a server in my basement that I found a way to get it onto my cable, and it's costing me $39.95 a month for broadband in my house and be able to serve that out of my basement. We got to get the cable companies to let us do that. I mean, we don't want it one way. We want to talk out to the web. If we sit back and just let everything come in, we have the influence what the service is going to be. So there's ways to do it. Not everybody can do it. The people that can do it got to start showing the people that can't do it, you know, what we can do. And then we can start making the service providers, you know, so they really don't think we want it. That's the problem, because we're not doing it.
Yeah. The answer to that is a dollar per gigabyte of data transferred. And the question is, how much audio is that? in this compressed file, and somebody has to pay. Right. Use the infrastructure of the internet. Yep. It's your ISP or it's your cable modem company,
right,
and they do not have it in your SLA, in your service level,
right,
agreement, to have for you to be serving. So, but we will solve the problem. There will be a cost associated with everything. Harold, I think this has been great. I think we ought to go to Kevin and get to hear,
sure,
his just-in-time recording stuff maybe for a few minutes. Give him the microphone.
Okay.
Because you can get some more you can learn about just-in-time putting video and audio up from Kevin. And then for those of you who hang on late enough, we'll take Chris Leiden's blog radio studio, which is in a box here, and put it out on the table and let you see the equipment he uses. So we'll have like a show and tell probably within the last 10, 15 minutes.
So I've got a fairly small thing to show you. So
the instantaneous stuff is very high, but
the I've got my video adapter downstairs.
Questions go by.
Back in a sec.
If anybody's interested in the price of this stuff, this is like $60. His microphone I bought for $19.99, and his headset's probably about $10. So it's real cheap, you know. It's amazing what you can buy off the shelf today.
It sounds like what you've got there is kind of the equivalent of Chris's audio blogging box. So is that, can you put those specs or what you would suggest up on the blog so that we can see?
Earlier in the demonstration, I did it. I did it live right in here.
Cool.
So you can just...
Is it on your...
Yes. Blog? If you look up audio blogging, I'm the number one hit, so...
Cool.
That little creative unit is only about $60.
I thought you just said.
Between, in the Christopher Blog Radio Project, we have bought every USB sound device on the planet, and we tried them all, from the little $17 iMic, which works extremely well, or $30 iMic, which works extremely well.
Yeah, it's a really good
thing. Up to ones that will allow you to do real-time monitoring of what the computer is recording. Okay, and that's in the 200. They're all listed at. I'll give you the link in just a moment,
when we talk about Christopher's work, because all the tools and suppliers and prices are in on research on his site. Okay.
I think I said that. So I'm sort of sticking my head in the sand of this session. So
want to take the microphone from Harold,
yeah,
please? Thanks, sir.
So I come at this from a slightly different angle from Harold, though. I'm very much excited by the ideas of rich media blogging. I think there are two key things we need to solve for this, and I'm not sure, and we're certainly not there yet. This morning in the technology thing, I said that if you look at text creation, you've got a continuum from chat, where you're typing in real time, to book production, where you're creating a work that's going to take a long time to come out. And somewhere in the middle, you've got blogging, where you can create it fairly quickly, but it is for publication, and there is a sense of making something of permanence. In the audio and video world, we have the one extreme, which is live broadcasting, like I was doing earlier, where you just plug it in, set it up, and it goes out, and that's the equivalent of the chat. And you've got video editing tools, and there are most video you see is edited on computers now, but the tools are big and complex and designed for professionals. And there are a few slightly simpler things like iMovie, but basically the process is the same. The editing takes a long time, the shooting takes a long time. What's missing is just-in-time editing tools. And Harold was basically showing one there with that recording one. That's very much an example of what I'm talking about. The other thing that's missing is a grammar of interaction on the client side that makes it useful to do. Because I've tried some of these telephone audio blogging services.
And they're, you know, it's like I'm getting voicemail on my computer. Now, I don't like getting voicemail at the best of times. I'd rather have an email because, you know, I can read the email rather than have to listen to someone tell me something at great length. And the dynamics of voicemail are wrong. It's far too easy to make and it's far too hard to play back. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it doesn't have takeoff, whereas blogging is the other way around. Blogging, it's a bit of effort to make something, but it's easier to read. So the ratio is in your favor that way around. Now, at the moment, the audio stuff, the ratio is too far. The effort you have to do to make something like Chris's piece is, you know, basically it takes about a day to do each one, I imagine. No?
No. How long does it take you to do a 12-minute interview?
To edit it?
To edit it.
Record and edit.
Record and edit.
An hour plus.
Okay. Well, that's not so bad then. Okay.
Yeah.
I was expecting it to take
it
longer.
It depends on how much cleaning up has to be done.
Right. So it's okay, so it's close to the same order of magnitude, but there's still quite a fair bit of effort involved in getting set up and doing it. And the tool like that moves it a lot closer, and video is more so. To do the same thing with video would be more work, because you have to rig a fair bit more. But on the playback side, there are also problems there. Listening, you know, I listened to all of Chris's things, but I didn't listen to them on my computer. Because I find it really hard to listen to speech while I'm at a keyboard. You know, I'm trying to run two threads through the left half of my brain that's processing speech. It just doesn't work. When I'm driving, I can listen to speech very easily. So I transferred all the things onto my iPod and played them in the car when I was driving around, and that worked perfectly. And then I saw the RSS enclosures thing, and I thought about that, and that makes some sense. I can subscribe to this thing, the new ones will come in, and then I can put them on the iPod and take them with me. But there's still, you know, the process is still fairly involved. So what I put together just quickly was an automation example of how that works. And I talked briefly to Adam about this yesterday, so he's publicly outed me to say, do this, so I'm going to have to do it. He made a little RSS feed like Harold's, but his has got a song in it, just to be different. And there's a... So there's a link to it here. At the moment, what I've got is a command line tool because I haven't written a user interface yet. So excuse my Unix. I'm going to run this tool. The idea would be that this tool would be something that would run at night, like the aggregator does, and it'll download things. So I run this tool. It connects to the weblog. RSS feed and looks for the MP3 files in it. It's not going to fail on me, isn't it? Find one. Weird.
Let me just comment that what Adam Curry, Kevin Marks, and Harold Gilchrist have in common is that they all take the MP3 files from Christopher Lydon's blogradio.org and put them into their iPod and listen to them at drive time. So it's a very significant thing happening that the media is getting reach beyond the internet into the places where we normally expect to be listening to interesting things. This is not easy at the moment. They have to go through quite a few steps to make that happen. The whole goal of this meeting here is to get them all working together and figuring out a way to automate that whole thing. So you're plugging your iPod in. I'm sure Apple would love this, and your iPod is sucking up, or whatever your medium of choice, it's sucking up the material that you'd like to have with you in your car.
It'd be great if the radio were internet aware and could actually do that.
That could be happening too. The car radio, we're seeing Wi-Fi in the car, we're seeing Bluetooth in the car. So it's not too hard a step to imagining that the tool that Kevin is building and Harold is demonstrating is something you could ask for while you're driving and say, what is Christopher talking about right now? And get it in relatively near real time going inside your vehicle.
Okay, well that will teach me to try and do live demos of code. Here's one. Oh, no, it's coming. So, I don't know if you saw that. I switched back to the iTunes, and it created a new playlist called Adam Curry Sync Pod, which is what he called his feed, and it downloaded the MP3 into that. Has it? It didn't download the MP3. But it's probably still doing that, actually. Yeah, it's still downloading next to the link speeds there. So again, yeah, this is something that we've talked about, is you don't necessarily have a fast enough connection to download these things in real time. So what you want is something that runs when you're not using the computer to pull them in. This thing's running here in the background. I could go off and do something else while this is running. So now it's brought the track in that was Evan's thing, and I can play that. And hey, Benzie. Similarly, this is the track. This is the feed from Chris's one. And I can do the same with yours. What was the URL for yours? What was the URL for your feed? Say it again.
/0000001.
So what was it? What was the domain?
ablogs.
Yep.
.com.
Yep.
/000.
Yep.
/0001.
Yeah.
/bees/. Was it right?
That's it?
No, it's going to be RSS.
/bees/RSS.
I think it's RSS2, but
XML. Quite a mouthful, yeah.
But see, if you grab the link on my site, yeah. You don't have to.
No human being should ever have to type that.
That's not it?
Don't think so. Let me go to your site.
Ablogs. It's probably a little too technical.
Just go to Google and look up Blogging Talks.
Okay.
Which one is it?
The easiest thing is just go to Google and just do a search on Blogging Talks.
Is there a typo
there?
I guess we're running out of short time anyway. Kevin, I think maybe you've done it.
Okay.
Do you want to say something more?
I don't worry about it.
Which one are you?
That's not it.
Why don't you guys try to take that online, and I'll bring out a few of Christopher's tricks.
Although he says, don't tell them the secret sauce. And I try to explain that Christopher Lydon's secret sauce is Christopher Lydon. And that there's no way the tools that you're about to see in this room will turn any of you into the kind of craftsman that can do the magic human contact that he brings into the web. So there's nothing really that we're going to give away here, even if I show everything we've tried.
I'd like to steal the screen.
Don't show him how to plug it in.
So Kevin, could I actually borrow your machine for a moment? Could you browse to blogradio.org for us? This is Christopher's full studio, and would you wave the tiny portable? Which, do you have it with you with your double headphones, or you've just got the very level
stuff? I'll borrow
this for
mic, earphones.
The very tiniest thing, which I don't approve of, is a mic that he's waving back and forth. It's very poor audio. What he does when he interviews someone on location, though, is he has two sets of headphones that have built-in boom microphones. I brought just one of those here because he has the other two in a little case. And he can sit in a room and connect two of these headsets. Now, we bought about a dozen of these headsets. Not all of them can do what this one can do. But basically, I've got a microphone right here and headphones. And by jacking this into the headphone output of the computer and the microphone input, I can do two of these, provided I have a little adapter that takes two mono microphone feeds and puts them into the left and right channels of the mini disc recorder. Now, when we first tried to do that, every one of these so-called multimedia headsets stopped working. No microphone signal. Does anyone know why they don't work? The answer is what's called plug-in power.
Right.
which your computer provides a little 1.5 volts to the electret condenser microphone, which is in most of these. This is a rare dynamic microphone. It doesn't need a battery, which is why Christopher can take these around and work in the field. This costs about $70. It's a Noddy, and it's on the website. Couldn't open blogradio.org. Pardon me? Well, it's probably up under both. This is the guy who entered it into the DNS. So there should be both there. I don't know why we're down. We can go instead to another site if that doesn't show up, okay? The, I've lost my badge. Okay, so the multimedia headphones, the ones that require the voltage, can be used if you buy a little adapter, which is going to be on this site, which has the technology description also. In fact, let's go. This one isn't working. So
DNS is actually out of Warwick.com.
Yeah, we don't have real control over it. Christopher's DNS. Try to bring up, that's not it, it's the web. Try to bring up media.skybuilders.com, if you would. media.skybuilders.com/Leiden, L-Y-D-O-N, /studio.html. And I should get over this side of things for Holly's sake. Okay, this is a description of the work, and this is work in progress as of a few days ago. If you scroll up a little bit, we'll get into some of the more exciting things going on here. I've just recently bought this Tascam US-122 unit for $270, which is like the little Creative Labs one, also like one called Mobile Pre. This is the area of getting your audio into the computer very cleanly by going in the USB port. Many laptops crash when you put these devices in. They work well in desktop environments, they don't work too well in laptops, IBMs especially. Anyway, Christopher's studio looks like this. Starting at the headsets you just saw, two headsets are coming, and they're in this case plugged in through a mixer so that he can adjust the gains very nicely, which he can do when he's in the studio. When he goes out into the field, he uses simple little Y adapters to plug two mics into the microphone and two headsets and puts one on his guest and one on himself. And he can conduct an interview with pretty high fidelity. In this case, the audio then goes through this mini disc recorder, and Christopher's recording a backup of the audio in extremely high quality. It's basically CD quality. It's Sony's compression ASCAP. It's what is it called? An A-Track 3. So he's recording it in Sony's proprietary compression here. Simultaneously, the line out is crossing and going through this Mobile Pre USB interface. This is, again, about one of six that we've tested. And this one crashes this laptop too often to be usable. So we just moved up to this Tascam, and I haven't plugged it in yet. You haven't seen it yet. Tascam, I have hopes for. Anyway, the sound then comes through and into the input of the laptop, where while people are being interviewed, a file is being created in real time inside the laptop. So if he goes into the field and makes a recording and brings back the mini disc, it's twice the hour or half hour. If he does a in the studio interview, it's real time. As soon as he stops interviewing, he can turn around and start editing. Something, by the way, he could never do in public radio because he wasn't allowed to touch those knobs or this editing interface, which were in the hands of the unions. And at this moment, he is able to do everything from one end of creating to editing, polishing, and producing and publishing his work, and that's why I love working with him. It's just a great, liberating experience to think that he controls the entire process.
Just okay. Like a blogger controls the entire process.
Just as all of us as audio bloggers and video bloggers in the coming years, we will be our own publishers talking to the world, okay? No editors in between except our own work.
This is running out of batteries, would you?
Running out of tape, probably, Holly, is what it's warning you. And there's a little tape right on the table. So when it does shut down, just put that one in there.
Shut down.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. So once it gets into the computer, Christopher's learned an editing program in this case called Sonic Foundry. We also have Pro Tools, which his producer Mary McGrath is familiar with. From public radio, a much higher quality, much more expensive tool set. But this one does extremely quick editing of one-on-one, two-person interviews. Okay. I think I've also put into the case then for you to see what they look like if anyone wants to come up. This is the little USB that Harold showed and is using. It's $60. This is the mobile pre, what it looks like. I can get a feeling for it. His computer's in here, and we actually could see how it gets all set up. It's probably, this is the mixer. We have about four different mixers, from a tiny little mixer that just takes three microphones and no power in it, to ones that range up to a little bit larger than this one. Trying to get a compact studio, this one can go on the road and do all the work, and then when Christopher's done with his file, we have helped him with the problem of getting the audio up onto his website with an HTML browser interface file upload tool that we're building at skybuilders.com that has the ability for him to just throw his MP3 up and then add it as a link into his blog. Now, we spoke earlier about the technical problems associated with the fact that there are multiple audio formats as far as the browser is concerned. If we send an MP3 file to a browser, you have about 50% chance that it will open in Windows Media, and maybe another 45% chance it will open in Real, and maybe a 5 or 10% chance it will open in QuickTime, depending on your machine. And all of those will open and surround Christopher's work with advertising. And when you're done and close it, they'll open up a pop-up ad that drives you crazy. So we are trying to work to create little iconized lines that show up in his web page, which say, okay, Chris wants to play an audio file. Let's open it inside the browser. Let's not call on Real and their marketing machine and Microsoft advertising. That is not completed yet, but we're hoping that the publishing process will be a lot cleaner and friendlier when we're done. So that's the basic setup, and I have the tools here for you to see. And we only have about seven more minutes, so let's go to questions.
Quick question. Anybody know for Mac audio, is there something out there that, is it built into the Mac? Somebody told me that.
Audacity is a really great open source way for that.
Cool. Okay.
Support on Mac, PC, and Windows.
If you just have to trim editing, you can use QuickTime Player, but it's not the proper editor. If you just want to trim a bit off the end, you can use that, but otherwise, yeah, Audacity is a good choice.
Let me say, we've got just a couple of minutes. Mention a few words about what I'm trying to do here today. This is my fourth conference in which I have been the video documentarian, and I am trying to gather a large amount of video footage, which we could eventually make skimmable and browsable and discoverable and readable, the way the information librarian was talking in the earlier session. It's a great challenge. My background is heavily in multimedia and video. Those of you who may know a magazine called New Media during the 90s, I was the digital video editor for New Media, covered all the video editing systems.
You may want to mention your name.
I'm sorry. I am Bob Doyle. That's exactly right. I also tried to get the magazine to move around into the web before they went